pile when someone dropped a case of MREs on our stack. I looked up and was face to face with none other than Vance. "Hey, man, what's up?" He was just as stunned as I was and thrust his hand out. "Dude, how you doing?" "Good as it gets, I guess." Vance looked around. "What the hell are you doing here?" I pointed at Sarge. "I'm with him." Vance looked over at the old man. "No shit. How'd you get tied up at the 101st? I laughed. "I don't know what you've been told, but there's only four of them, and it ain't the whole 101st. Vance looked back at the supplies. "I don't care if he's a one-man band. He got us all that. We haven't been able to get shit." "Yeah, he's pretty handy to have around. Saved my ass a couple of times already. You just keep turning up, first at that sheriff's office, now here. But it's great to see you. I'm like a bad penny, man. Can't get rid of me. How are JT and the kids?" "We're all good. It's been hard, but everyone's all right." "How you guys doing?" "We're good. We had to leave the house, though. That's been kind of rough." "No shit. Where are you guys staying?" "At some cabins in the river here." He looked toward the river, which was out of sight.
"There's cabins on the river?"
"Yeah, three of them. Us, these clowns, and my buddy Danny and his wife are there."
"I remember him."
"That's good he's with you guys."
"We got work to do, Morg. Get his number and call him," Sarge said, dropping a case in the pile.
Vance raised his eyebrows.
"He's a real charmer."
I had to laugh. "You have no idea." Vance and I both went back to work. It didn't take long with so many people helping, and soon we had found all of our boxes. I looked at the pile. While not enormous, it was far more than we could move on the boat.
"How in the hell are we going to move all this?" I asked Sarge.
"We'll take what we can, and leave the rest for another trip."
I shook my head.
"How much damn ammo do you need?"
"No such thing as too much ammo. It's like too much money. Never heard of it," Mike said from the turret.
I looked back at the pile and shook my head. While we were sorting out what to take this trip, Sheffield walked up.
"All right, Sarge, you delivered. Now what's this gonna cost me?"
Sarge turned and leaned on the truck, smiling.
"Well now, Captain, that almost hurt my feelings. What sort of man do you think I am?"
Sheffield smiled.
"Feelings? You ain't got no feelings." "Don't worry about it, Captain. We'll work it out later. I just wanted to get you guys some help."
"We damn sure needed it."
Sheffield's expression grew serious. "And believe me, we're on the right side of this fight. I'm ready to make someone pay."
"And pay they will," Sarge said.
"What's the plan, then?" Sheffield asked.
"We're going to start our recon of the FEMA camp soon. You'll need to be involved in that for sure. It's going to be a tough nut to crack."
"How many men do they have there? Any idea?"
"Nothing firm. We only looked at it once, and it was brief."
"I guess we'll know soon enough."
"Indeed we will. We're going to load our stuff up and head out. I've got other things I need to attend to."
Sheffield stuck his hand out.
"Sarge, I can't say thank you enough. We really do appreciate it."
"Don't worry about it. Glad to help,"
he replied, shaking hands.
We all got in Shane's truck and drove back to the ramp. After we loaded all we could fit, Sarge asked Shane to store the rest somewhere until we came back to get it.
We said our goodbyes and were back on the river before we knew it. The boat was cramped with all the supplies, but it was a nice kind of cramped. You might even say that the security of knowing we had these supplies made the trip all the more comfortable. Even though I messed with Sarge about all the ammo, I knew how important it was to have on hand. The sun was blazing in the sky for the return trip, and sat in my back seat with my feet up on the ammo cans, enjoying the ride. Chapter 31. As the cabins came into view, I saw Little Bit shooting her bow, a palmetto stem arrow wobbling through the air. Mel and Bobby were sitting at the tables watching her. As we glided into the bank, they walked down. Mel looked at the boat approvingly.
"I don't see any bullet holes."
"Nah, this is a milk run. No shooting this round," Sarge replied.
I laughed.
"Thankfully,
I could only imagine how Danny would react to his boat getting shot up.
Bobby rolled her eyes. I don't even want to think about it.
We started stacking the ammo and the cases of MREs we'd brought back out of the boat. Sarge wanted to store the stuff near his cabin.
Where are the guys? I asked Mel as I carried one of the cases.
They're out somewhere making a thing for the pigs.
Okay, I'll go find them as soon as this is done.
We've got breakfast if you're hungry.
You know it. What's on the menu today?
Smoked mullet and grits, and you won't believe this, but it's really good.
I do believe it. Did the girls eat it?
Bobby started to laugh, and Mel let out a sigh before answering.
It was quite the interesting breakfast. At first they were all like, no, no, I'm not eating that, waving her hands around for added drama. But Danny convinced Ashley to try it, and she really liked it. So naturally, her older sisters weren't going to be outdone by her, and they tried it.
So yes, they all ate it, Bobby said, finishing Mel's story.
Soon as we get this stuff moved, I'll be ready for some, I said, as I went toward Sarge's cabin. Mike was digging a hole to store the supplies.
Need a hand, Mike? I asked.
Nah, we got this. Thanks for helping get it over here.
No sweat. We need ammo. Kind of nice to have it sent next day air.
He laughed. How are you fixed for ammo? You need any?
No, I'm good.
Still got several thousand rounds. Danny might need some, though.
That's cool. Tell him to come by later and get some. We also got some 9mm for those H&Ks. When I find it, I'll bring it over.
Thanks, man. There's breakfast over on the tables. Smoked mullet and grits.
Sweet. We'll be over in a minute.
Mel saw me coming and set a bowl on the table. As soon as I sat down, the girls ran up.
You're gonna love it, Daddy. It's really good,
Little Bit said.
It's not that good. I mean, it's okay, Taylor said.
Says the girl who ate two bowls, Bobby said with a laugh.
In normal times, something like this would be considered a novelty or gastronomic adventure. But under the current situation, it was the difference between eating and not eating. Trying these grits, I was very surprised.
Wow, that's good.
How'd you get them so creamy? I said.
Little Bit started laughing.
We used some of the canned butter, and then to add flavor, some salt, pepper, and some other spices.
Good thing you like it, because it's also going to be lunch.
Fine by me, I said, shoveling another spoonful into my mouth.
I told you it was good,
Little Bit shouted as she jumped up and down. Then she let out a loud burp and stopped hopping. She waved her hand in front of her face.
That didn't taste good, and it stinks, too.
This brought everyone nearly to tears. Luckily, grits are hard to choke on, or I'd have been in trouble. After eating, I went upriver to join the rest of the guys working on the pig pen. They already had one strand of wire up and were working on the second. I followed the wire until I found them.
How goes the pig corral? I asked.
Thad looked up from hammering a homemade insulator into a tree.
We about got it now.
What'd you make these insulators out of?
Jeff laughed.
We used a little bit of everything. There are glass bottles pushed over limbs down through there, with the wire wrapped around them.
These are made from PVC.
Whatever works. This will give them some forage, so we won't have to feed them as much.
Way I figure it, there's enough in here that if we add the scraps that Miss Mel and Miss Bobby put in that bucket, it should be enough, Thad said.
Good. Hey, man, that mullet was awesome.
Thad's big smile spread across his face.
I told you. One thing I can do is smoke meat.
Which reminds me, Danny, you still going to try and get that smoker?
Yep, Danny nodded.
Jeff raised a hand.
I'm going with you.
What are you guys going to take over there, the truck? I asked.
No, we talked about it and want to come in from the backside. We're going to use the four-wheelers, Jeff said.
Good idea. Smaller and faster. Just take one of the radios, in case you get your ass in a sling.
We're just going to dip in, get the smoker, look at our houses real quick, and we'll be out, Danny said.
I helped finish up the wire, which didn't take long, and then headed back to the cabins. Mel and Bobby had small seed starter trays laid out on the picnic tables. They were filling the small sections with soil they dug up near the river. Danny stepped up on the bench and sat on the table.
About time we got a garden going.
Bobby looked up from the bucket of dirt. If we waited on you guys, we'd never have one.
Just like a woman, it's never enough.
And when it is, they complain it's too much, I said with a grin.
Mel looked at me.
Oh, shut up, you.
What? What'd I say?
Thad was laughing.
Somehow, I don't think you ever been told it's too much.
I looked at him with mock surprise.
Damn it, man, I have too.
I eat too much, talk too much, I do all kinds of stuff too much.
He's right, Dad. He does talk too much, Danny said.
Holy crap. With friends like these...
I shook my head,
but couldn't help but smile.
We're gonna go get ready to leave, Jeff said as he walked off.
Danny climbed off the table.
I'll be right there.
Bobby looked at Danny.
Where are you going?
We're going back to get Reggie's smoker. Plus, I can check on the house.
Really, Dee? You think it's safe?
Should be. We're taking the ATVs so we can come in through the woods. If it looks like someone's there, we won't go in.
I don't know. She looked at me, which made Mel look at me.
Are you going?
No, I'm staying here. But if he needs us, all he has to do is call on the radio, and we'll go get him.
It was plain for all to see Bobby was pissed.
Why do you idiots always go looking for trouble? Why can't you just stay here?
For a smoker? Really? Do we really need it?
Calm down, Bobby. We're going to get it. I'll be back later.
Danny turned and walked off.
Bobby looked at me.
What's with you guys?
Hey, don't look at me. I ain't going anywhere.
Bobby shook her head and followed after Danny. I looked at Mel.
Well, she's pissed.
She should be. Why didn't you stop him?
What? How's this my fault?
He's a grown-ass man. He can do what he wants.
It's like you guys need to go looking for trouble.
She looked past me and pursed her lips.
Speaking of trouble.
Sarge was walking up as Mel and she stormed away.
What's wrong with her?
Jeff and Danny are going back to get a smoker from Reggie's place. Bobby's pissed off and somehow it's my fault.
A real smoker would be nice, but probably not the best idea. They'd better be careful.
Sarge looked off at the river for a minute.
When are they going?
They're getting ready now.
I'll send Mikey with them. He likes going for a ride.
They can take my buggy and some hardware just to be safe.
They should leave soon, though, 'cause tomorrow morning we're leaving out early to go meet some boys.
Who?
You remember those guys blocking the road?
I nodded.
They called and said they got something we need to see.
Hmm, that should be interesting.
That's what I thought. I'll get Mikey and tell him to get up with them.
Thanks, Sarge. The old man smiled.
Don't worry about it. We got your back.
Chapter 32. Danny took the off-road route to the back side of the neighborhood, with Jeff in the back and Mike manning the saw in the passenger seat. When they got close, Mike had him stop and they got out. Simply riding in blind was a really bad idea, so they would walk to the neighborhood. Mike led the way, moving in a slow crouch toward the nearest house. At the edge of the property, they knelt down. Mike whispered,
"Look everywhere. Look for anything out of the ordinary. Remember, these houses have been empty for a long time. Pay attention for anything that looks like someone's been around."
After 15 or 20 minutes of observation, Mike waved for Danny and Jeff to follow. Mike dropped to his stomach and crawled to the corner of the next house and peeked around. Danny and Jeff both knelt down, watching the surrounding area. Mike brought a pair of binoculars up and scanned the road, checking windows and houses, looking anywhere that someone could hide. He settled the glass in the road, looking intently. After a moment, he crawled back to Danny and Jeff.
"See anything?"
Jeff asked.
"Yes and no."
"What the hell does that mean?"
"I didn't see anyone, but I did see 3 pairs of footprints on the road. Someone's been through here."
"You think it's the feds?"
Danny asked.
Mike looked back at the road, then back to them.
"I doubt it. They probably wouldn't be stupid and walk right down the middle of the road.
Just some people out looking around, probably," Danny said.
"I hope that's all it is," Jeff replied.
"Let's go find out.
Just stay behind me. Keep about 10 feet between us. Whoever is last in line, watch our six. You know, watch behind us.
Yeah, I know what it means, Jeff said.
Mike moved out along a fence line toward the road, with Danny following, and Jeff bringing up the rear. Pausing at the edge of the road, Danny tapped Mike on the shoulder.
We've got to pass my place to get to Reggie's. Let's take a look at my place first.
Mike nodded.
I'll cross first, then I'll signal you over.
Danny nodded, and Mike took off across the road. He stopped at the fence on the other side and looked around, then waved Danny over. Jeff followed shortly after. Once they were all on the other side of the road, they moved along the fence. Danny's house was three down on the left, and they moved slowly, checking the windows and fronts of them as they crossed them. At the driveway to the house next to Danny's, Mike stopped and pointed at the road. Jeff and Danny looked at the three sets of footprints clearly visible in the soft sand. Running alongside them was a set of narrow tire tracks.
Looks like a cart or something, Mike whispered.
Looks like they went in and didn't come out, Danny said.
I think it's probably just some refugees looking for a place. Just keep an eye on it.
When we get up to your house, check the outside first, then clear the inside. I know you guys have never done this before, so remember not to point your weapon at anyone's back. I'll go through the door and to the right. Danny, you go left, sweep left to right. If you see anyone with a weapon, drop them. Jeff, you cover the center. Your primary focus is the back of the room. This has to happen fast. We clear each room using the same process. Questions? Jeff and Danny shook their heads.
Okay, then let's go.
They went to the far side of the house, sweeping the porches as they went. As they passed the front door, it was obvious it had been kicked in. Danny tapped Mike's shoulder and pointed. He wanted to go in. Mike shook his head and whispered,
"We need to check the outside first."
Danny nodded, and they continued the check of the exterior. Going down the far side, Mike came to the back corner and peered around. He slowly backed up and looked back to the guys, pointing to his eyes, then held up three fingers. Danny nodded and tapped Jeff on the shoulder and repeated the process. Once all three were aware of the people around the corner, Mike stepped out, with Danny and Jeff hot on his heels.
"Show me your hands!" Mike shouted, advancing on the three people.
A young woman sitting in a plastic lawn chair at the edge of the pond screamed. When the girl screamed, a young guy spun around and attempted to get an old pump shotgun leaning against a pine tree, but slipped and fell face first in the mud. The third person was another female, who also started screaming as the guys rapidly advanced on them.
"Put your hands up! Do it now!" Mike shouted.
The young man stuck his hands out, shaking his head. Both girls put their hands up.
"Jeff, watch them. Danny, we need to clear the house," he said, as he headed for the back porch.
Jeff took up a position 10 feet away from the three, pointing the shouldered AK at them. Mike and Danny quickly went up the steps to the porch. Glass from the French doors was shattered all over the floor. Their wood frame splintered. They quickly crunched across the debris and into the great room. Mike moved to the open door of the bedroom and paused before moving through it and sweeping the room. They checked the closets in the bathroom, which were both empty. They did a quick check of the small bathroom by the stairs before heading up. Mike gagged when he opened the door and jerked his head out.
"Dude, you don't want to see that."
Danny leaned past him and looked in. The toilet was full,
not only with shit, but with the rags and socks used to wipe by the numerous depositors.
They methodically cleared each room upstairs. The house was empty, but it was obvious that many people had been through here. Every drawer, closet, and cabinet had been opened and rummaged through. Danny walked through the house, looking at all the things people had simply tossed around. It was the little things that bothered him most, like seeing the rocking chair that was built by his grandfather, who'd long passed. He was sickened by the way people had treated his property. They went outside, where Jeff was still guarding the three people. now spread out on the ground. Danny walked past Mike, straight to the guy on the ground, and kicked his feet.
"Why'd you do that to my house? That's my house!"
The girls flinched when he started to yell. Mike grabbed his shoulder and pulled him back a step, but Danny jerked away.
"We didn't do it!"
the man in the ground protested.
"Bullshit! I saw the fucking mess, you nasty bastard shitting in the toilet, trashing my house.
It wasn't us. We went in, but we didn't do anything, we swear,"
one of the girls pleaded.
"She's telling the truth.
We're staying at the house next door, on the back porch. We're not even staying inside,"
the guy said.
"Jeff, cover him while I search him real quick," Mike said.
Mike performed a quick but thorough search. When he finished, he told them to get on their feet.
"If you didn't trash the place, who did?" Danny asked.
The guy was obviously nervous. His eyes darted back and forth from face to face.
"I don't know. It was like that when we got here."
"Why are you staying over there? Why that place?" Mike asked.
"It's got a big porch and a couple of those big lounge chair things we can sleep on.
Why not just go inside?
Just feels wrong to move into someone else's house.
But we need a place to stay, and it's dry." Mike looked at Danny.
"I believe them. I mean, look at them."
"Whatever," Danny said.
"You seen anyone around here?"
A little more relaxed, the man replied.
"Yeah, almost every day the feds come through."
"Through where?"
"Here,"
he replied, pointing at Danny's house.
"They go through a couple of houses every day, always the same ones."
"Have they been here today?" Mike asked, looking back toward the road.
"We wouldn't be out here if they hadn't. We hide out in the woods when they show up."
"What other houses do they go through?"
"I don't know. One of them is down the road, like near the main road, and somewhere on that street to the left down there."
Mike looked at Danny and shook his head. They knew which houses they were checking every day. Mike asked Jeff to go get the buggy and pick him up on the way back.
"Danny, you stay here with them. This shouldn't take long."
"What? Why me?" Danny looked at the three. "I don't want to stay here with them."
"Suck it up. I'll be back soon," Mike said, walking away.
Danny stared at them intently. The silence clearly unnerved the girls. In an attempt to mitigate the awkwardness of the situation, he cleared his throat.
"You've got a nice place," the young man said.
Danny narrowed his eyes at him as he continued.
"I mean, I know it's been messed up, but it's a nice house. And we really didn't do any of that."
He pointed toward the tree line.
"We dug a pit out there, and that's where we, you know, go."
One of the girls spoke. "We really do have to pee in a hole. We wouldn't wreck someone else's house." As much as he wanted to hate these people, Danny just couldn't bring himself to do it. He understood their situation. Hell, he was nearly in their situation.
"Where are you guys from?"
"Kinda all over.
I'm from Pine Hills."
He pointed to a blonde girl. "She's from Orlando." He nodded to the red-headed girl who had been screaming her head off.
"She's from Ohio."
Danny looked at her with raised eyebrows.
"Don't ask," she said.
The blonde brushed dirt from the knees of her filthy jeans.
"We just sort of came together."
"I can relate."
"How'd you guys end up together?" the guy asked.
Danny waved a hand at him.
"We're not going to get into that."
The blonde cocked her hips to the side, her hands resting on them.
"They're looking for you guys, aren't they?" she said with a knowing smile.
When Danny didn't answer, she continued. "What'd you guys do?"
"We didn't do anything, and they aren't looking for us."
"Don't worry, man. We ain't gonna say anything. Hell, I don't even want to see them," the young guy said.
Mike wheeled around the side of the house in the buggy, with the smoker in tow. He waved Danny over.
"Take the shells out of his shotgun and toss them over the fence, and let's get out of here. I want to fix the doors. I don't want to leave the place like this."
Mike grabbed his shoulder. "Look, man, I know it's hard to see your home like this, but it'd be a waste of time. They'll just tear it down again."
"He's right. Plus, anything you do to try to fix it might raise their attention.
Probably better to let them think we've never been here," Jeff said, then pointed to the small group. "Unless they tell them." Danny replied. I don't think they will. They're scared shitless as it is.
He went over and emptied the gun, throwing the shells into the neighbor's yard, where they were staying.
You can get them when we leave. Hey, man, where are you guys staying?
He hesitated a moment.
Can we come?
Sorry, you can't come right now, but we're up on Hopkins Prairie if you find your way there.
Danny climbed into the back seat, and Mike took off around the house.
Jeff turned and gave Danny a confused look.
Where's Hopkins Prairie?
It's up north of here. Figured, if they did get caught, they might try and give us up. Hopkins Prairie is 30 miles north of here.
Jeff nodded approvingly.
Send them on a wild goose chase.
Damn right.
Mike whooped, and they sped off. Chapter 33. Jess and Mary were heading back to their room after another dreary day of serving breakfast. Mary was kicking the dirt as she walked, head down.
Jess, are you sure you want to try and escape? It seems awfully risky, the more I think about it.
Jess rubbed the back of her neck.
Yes, I am.
I was just thinking, you know, that old saying about the grass ain't always greener and all.
At least there is grass.
Jess gestured toward the fence, some 600 meters away. And it's my choice if I walk on it.
Mary glanced up at her.
Jess, it ain't that bad. I mean, really. We're warm, safe, and dry. We've got plenty to eat. There's even a doctor here.
You can't guarantee any of that on the other side of the fence.
Yeah, but we're still not free. We're prisoners.
Just because they say it's for our own good doesn't make it any less true.
I don't need or want them to tell me what's best for me. Let me decide.
Inside the room, Jess fell onto her bunk, laying her arm over her eyes.
I'm going to take a shower, Mary said, as she gathered her things. I'll be right here.
Mary left, and Jess fell asleep. She woke up later when the door opened.
Still half asleep, she asked.
How was your shower?
I figured I'd take one after, a man's voice answered.
Jess bolted up on the bunk. The creepy man who had harassed her on her walk home was standing in front of the door.
What are you doing in here?
Jess yelled frantically.
Slowly, he reached up and took the toothpick from the corner of his mouth.
Why can't you be more like the rest of the bitches around here? You know this is going to happen. Just go with it. I promise you'll like it.
He reached down and unclipped his pistol belt, laying it on the table. She jumped to her feet.
Don't you fucking come near me!
He smiled and rolled his sleeves up.
We can play games first. I like games.
Jess looked at the door. She was trapped. There was no way around him. Her eyes darted to the pistol in the holster, lying on the table. He saw it and laughed.
Not a chance in hell, darling.
He started to move around the table. She waited for a moment, letting him get closer, then darted around the table in the opposite direction. Once she was on the other side, he grabbed the table, driving it into her and pinning her to the wall with a maniacal laugh.
Where are you going now, darling?
He was a big man and strong. Leaning across the table, she could smell the coffee on his breath, and it made her sick. In sheer panic, she reached for his face, trying to shove her thumbs through his eyes, but his reactions were fast too. In one seemingly fluid motion, he grabbed her by the back of the head and slammed her face into the table. Like a flashbulb moment, she saw the table for only an instant as it rushed toward her. And then it was blackness. When Jess started to come to, it took a second for her head to register the intense pain screaming throughout her body. Her head was pounding and her neck was burning. A searing pain racked her throat. She was groggy and everything seemed far away.
Jess, are you okay?
She heard the words, but they weren't registering. Gaining her senses, she kicked her feet out and pushed herself back against the wall.
Jess, what happened?
Mary was kneeling in front of her.
Oh my God, what happened?
Mary cried, pulling the blanket from the bed and covering her. Jess looked at her, then down at herself, and pulled the blanket up. She couldn't speak, just shook her head.
Mary had tears running down her face, her hand covering her mouth.
Jess. Jess, oh my God, what happened? What happened to you?
Jess's eyes darted around the room. She was still unable to speak.
Jess, you stay there. I'm going to run and get help.
She jumped up, running out the door. She returned a few seconds later with Kay.
Oh, not again,
Kay whispered as she rushed over and knelt down beside her.
Oh, you poor thing. Jess, I'm so sorry.
She put an arm under her.
Let's get you up.
Kay, we need to call someone. We need to tell someone, Mary said urgently.
Honey, there's no one to tell.
What about the security people? You mean we can't ask them for help? Mary, so usually even-tempered, was beginning to sound hysterical.
Kay shook her head. I know, and I'm sorry, sweetie, I really am. But we can't trust that will lead to anything, but more heartache.
Come on, sit up. Kay helped Jess into a chair.
Mary, go to the kitchen and get a bowl of hot water and washcloth and soap,
Kay said, looking Jess over. She was gone in a flash, her hands still shaking.
Look, Jess, I know this is horrible, but do not tell anyone.
I'm sorry to have to say that to you.
Jess sat there numb, unresponsive.
Kay tried to smooth her hair, holding her face in her hands. When Mary returned, she used the cloth to clean the blood from Jess's nose and cheek. Once she was cleaned up, they helped Jess into her bed, covering her with a blanket. Kay took Mary by the hand and led her outside.
Mary, you have to keep this to yourself. Don't say anything. I'll handle it. You understand?
Kay whispered, gently but firmly.
But we have to tell someone. Someone has to do something about this. This can't happen,
Mary replied, starting to cry again.
I know. But if you tell the wrong person, it'll only be worse, trust me.
Kay looked at the door. Keep an eye on her.
Is Fred back yet?
Mary shook her head.
Then stay here in the morning. Don't worry about breakfast. I'll come check in on her, okay?
Mary nodded, wiping tears from her face.
Has this happened before?
Kay's face fell. Looking down, she said,
Yes, it has. It has happened.
More than it ever should.
She grabbed Mary by the shoulders.
You have to be strong for her right now. Can you do that?
Mary nodded. Okay, then go back and be with her. She needs a friend now. I'll be back soon.
Mary went back in and sat at the table. The small room suddenly had a different feel, a darkness to it. She didn't want to touch anything. Everything in the room seemed tainted now. She noticed a smear of blood on the table and shuddered. When the door opened, Mary screamed and jumped to her feet, knocking her chair over. Fred stood at the door, looking at her like she was crazy.
You all right?
Collecting her wits, Mary grabbed Fred's hand and stepped outside. Fred was confused.
What?
Mary bit her nails, tapping her foot up and down. Fred held her hands out.
What the hell?
Something happened.
Okay, what happened?
Something happened to Jess, something bad.
Fred looked at the door.
Like what? Did she get hurt?
Something like that. She trailed off, and the realization dawned on Fred. She mouthed the word, and Mary quickly nodded her head. Fred felt sick, partly because of her own recent experience.
When did it happen?
Earlier today. It's all my fault, Mary wailed as tears began to cascade down her cheeks.
How's it possibly your fault?
Mary wiped her face. I left her. I left her alone and went to take a shower. I shouldn't have left her.
Are you insane? It's not your fault. And you need to get that out of your head. If she went to take a shower and it happened to you, would you blame her?
Mary looked off and shook her head.
Who did it?
Fred asked.
We don't know.
She hasn't said anything since it happened.
What are they doing about it?
Mary told her what Kay had said, and Fred threw her hands in the air.
That's bullshit!
She paused, taking a deep breath before revealing her own story. It almost happened to me in the trail, but one of the guys stopped it.
God, poor Jess. This is unbelievable.
They went inside. Fred went to Jess's bunk and sat on the floor. The only thing visible was a shock of messy blonde hair. While Mary puttered around the cabin, Fred sat rubbing Jess's head, getting madder by the moment. She was going to find out who did this and make them pay for it, one way or another. A knock at the door brought them both to their feet. Kay stepped in, surprised to see Fred.
Oh, hey, Fred. When did you get back?
A little while ago. Shocked to come home and find this, she said, with an edge in her voice. Kay looked at Mary.
How is she?
She hasn't moved. Been just like that all day. Kay sat on the bed, pulling the blanket down and trying to roll her over to see her face. Jess resisted and stayed facing the wall. Kay patted her head and stood up.
She needs time right now.
She looked at Fred.
How was the trip?
Fred pushed her out the door.
Fuck the trip. What are we going to do about this?
Look, I told Mary that you have to be careful who you tell, or it can get worse for her and you guys. Fred stared at her, the fury building.
You know some asshole tried to do it to me on the trip?
No, I had no idea. I'm sorry. Kay took a deep breath before continuing.
Look, it happens, and everyone knows it. I've seen it, that they make a show of punishing the guy if the woman makes enough of a fuss. But I've also seen it go the other way. I've seen it get worse for the woman for telling.
Fred crossed her arms.
You know, that's the same thing I was told. It can get worse.
Is that how they keep women from reporting it? It's all okay as long as no one says anything?
Fred could see Kay was genuinely upset.
I know it sounds horrible.
She looked at Fred imploringly. And it is, but what can we do?
They have all the power.
Then we need to take some of it back.
How? How can we possibly do that?
Don't you worry about it. I'll take care of this.
I don't know what you're thinking about, but it's probably already been tried.
Kay continued. I told Mary to take tomorrow off and watch Jess. You do the same. See if you can get her to come around.
Fred smiled.
Thanks, Kay. I'll do that.
Good. I'll have someone bring you some dinner this evening.
That will be wonderful, thank you.
Fred went back into her room. Mary was still sitting at the table when Fred came in.
Anything?
Fred asked. Mary shook her head.
Same.
Would you be okay if I left her here for a minute? I need to run and do something.
Yeah, sure.
I won't be long, promise. Mary smiled.
Okay.
Fred walked toward the back of the camp, to the motor pool. She looked for Eric as she weaved through the rows of trucks, but she couldn't find him. She saw another one of the guys from the trip, who told her that Eric was off duty. She asked where he stayed, and the guy gave her directions. It didn't take long to find his room. Fred knocked on the door. From inside, a voice shouted,
"It's open!"
She opened the door and peered in. Eric was stretched out on his bunk in his boxers and a t-shirt. When he saw her, he smiled and sat up.
"Hey, Fred."
He waved her in.
"Come in, but hurry up and close the door. We're not supposed to have chicks in here."
She stepped in and closed the door.
"So I'm just a chick, huh?"
He made a show of looking her up and down.
"You do seem to have all the right hardware.
Nice of you to notice." Eric smiled.
"So what's with the visit?"
"I need a favor." In a really bad impression of the Godfather, he said,
"You'll be forever in my debt,"
and started to laugh. Fred winked at him.
"What, my credit's no good here?"
"Oh, quite to the contrary. It's an open line. So what do you need?"
"I need one of those cans of that stuff. Skull or whatever it is."
"Skull? What do you need that for?"
"Well, I am a chick, and chicks like to shop, you know."
She sat down beside him. "But I don't have any money." She gave an exaggerated frown and tilted her head to the side. Eric smiled.
"So what's in it for me?"
Fred leaned over, putting a hand high on his thigh for support. She turned his head toward her and kissed him.
"How's that?"
His face flushed red, but he tried to play it off.
"It's a nice sample."
She leaned back.
"Well, if you like that."
She paused and looked down at his crotch. "And we both know you did. You'll certainly like the rest." Eric's knees started to bounce. He leaned back, locking his hands behind his head, as if in deep thought.
All right, I'll give you a chance.
He got up and went to his wall locker, returning with a can. He held it out, but as she reached for it, he pulled it back slightly.
If anyone asks, you didn't get it from me.
Fred took the can with a flourish.
I won't tell a soul.
She kissed him again and brushed her hand over the front of his boxers.
Thanks.
She left him standing there and started back to her room.
Walking back, she thought about the tough spot she was in. She actually liked Eric, but he was one of them, and that complicated things. Why can't the world just go back to being normal?
She clutched the can in her hand as she walked. Skull made her think of her dad, and her heart swelled with sadness. She missed him so much. Fred went in and plopped down at the table, rolling the can back and forth.
What's that? Mary asked.
Tobacco, Fred replied.
What are you going to do with it?
Fred held the can up in front of her.
There's a little trick you can do with this stuff. My dad taught me. It's pretty neat. I'll show you later.
Jess suddenly sat up in the bed. Her hair was a mess, and she looked like hell.
I need to take a shower, she croaked.
Fred and Mary both jumped to their feet and helped her out of bed.
How do you feel?
Mary asked, holding a pair of pants open so Jess could step into them.
I don't want to talk about it.
Mary nodded, and together, she and Fred helped Jess dress. Jess moved slowly, in obvious pain. At the door, she paused, looking at them.
I need you two to come with me.
They helped Jess make her way to the showers and waited outside for her. She was inside for a long time. Mary checked on her once, concerned with how long she was taking. Jess reemerged in a clean change of clothes. The return trip was silent, the only thing to talk about being unpleasant. Back at the room, Jess sat on her bed, staring at the floor. Fred and Mary sat at the table watching over her. After a few minutes, Fred cleared her throat. She needed Jess to talk.
I'm not going to tell you I know what it feels like, because I don't, but I do know what it feels like to come close.
Jess looked at her, the slightest bit of curiosity written on her face. Fred took a deep breath.
Out on the trip, some guy tried to take advantage of me, but Eric stopped him.
So I can relate.
Sorta.
Mary reached over and squeezed Fred's hand. Jess nodded and looked back at the floor. Fred continued.
Do you know who it was, or even what he looked like?
Jess looked up slowly.
I'll never forget his face.
Her tone wasn't one of fear or even pain. It sounded like resignation, which only made Fred more eager to take action.
Can you point him out? Does he come to breakfast here?
I'm never going back into that tent again, ever. Fred dropped down on the floor, resting her hands on Jess's knees.
Look, he isn't going to get away with this. I'm going to take care of it, I promise. I just need to know what he looks like.
Jess let out a short huff.
How? How are you going to do anything? Apparently, no one can do anything in this fucking camp.
Fred snatched the can from the table and held it up.
What? You're going to try to kill him with throat cancer?
Yeah, that ought to do it. Fred looked at the can.
Do you know this stuff has, like, 20 times the nicotine of cigarettes?
Jess shrugged.
So?
So I know how to get it out. I can put it in this asshole's morning coffee, and bam, he's dead almost immediately.
Jess looked up, cocking her head to the side.
How do you know that?
Let's just say my dad had an interesting library.
How would it kill him? Mary asked.
Basically, it'll look like his heart exploded. It's not like they're going to do an autopsy on him when he falls over at breakfast.
You sure this will work? Jess asked.
Positive. I've seen it done.
Your dad killed someone like this?
Mary asked, excitedly.
No, he didn't kill anyone. At least, not that I know of. He did it to a rat, just to see if it really worked.
And it did? What did it look like?
Yes, it did. And let's just say, it looked very unpleasant.
Who does something like that in front of their daughter? Mary asked,
more to herself than out loud. Fred shot back. Look, I was raised by my dad. My mom ran off when I was 3. He was my best friend, and he taught me a lot of stuff. From working on cars, to how to reload a gun. You name it, we did it. Like making poison, Jess said with a smirk. Exactly. Don't question it. All I need is for you to point him out. I can't do it. Jess paused and pointed at Mary. But she can. Mary did a double take. Me? How can I do it? I didn't see him. Yes, you did. The day we were walking back and a man hassled us. Her voice shifted to a barely audible whisper. That's who it was. Mary's eyes went wide and she covered her mouth with her hand.
Him? He's the one?
Jess didn't respond. Fred looked at Mary. Could you recognize him? Mary nodded. Yep. He's got a mustache, like the guy in that old show in Hawaii with the helicopter. Magna P.I.? Mary smiled tightly. Yeah, that's it. Good. Then tomorrow, you'll point him out.
How do you get it out?
Jess asked. The nicotine. You soak the tobacco overnight in water. In the morning, you strain it, twisting all the liquid out. Then the liquid is boiled until the water is removed. It looks like a thick syrup. If you do it long enough, it gets kind of like a paste. A knock at the door cut the conversation short. Kay stepped in with a stack of trays and some bottles of water. She looked at Jess and smiled, setting the trays on the table. Honey, I am so sorry. I wish there was something I could do. Jess didn't acknowledge the statement, staring at the floor instead. Obviously uncomfortable, Kay patted Jess on the leg. There's anything you need, you just let me know. Kay stepped toward the door. There's some treats in there for you girls, too. I'll come by tomorrow. Good night, girls. Thanks, Kay. Good night, Mary said, taking the top tray from the stack. Jess wasn't interested in eating. She took a bottle of water and lay back on her bunk. Fred dangled a Rice Krispie treat in front of her, hoping to get her to smile, but Jess shook her head. When Fred finished eating, she took the trays back to the kitchen. After rinsing them, she went back to where the trash was kept. Fred went through the empty cans and found one about the size of a large soup can. Perfect, she thought. She quickly rinsed it out, then hid it under her shirt on the walk back to the room. Back in the room, she set the can down on the table and emptied the tobacco into it. She poured water from one of the bottles Kay had brought over and let it settle. Now we wait. Chapter 34. I cast my line out into the slow-moving water and looked over at Thad. Back when things are normal, I used to wish I could fish all day. Now, I mean, it's still fun, but it ain't the same. Thad was trying to extricate the worm on his hook. Fishing 'cause you want to, and fishing 'cause you have to, are two entirely different things. He flipped the green mass into the river and cast the line back out. There's a lot of things I remember wishing for. We thought we had it so rough, but man, we really had it made. Yeah, no shit. I was never one for keeping up with the Joneses, but I let what I thought was the rat race consume me. Hell, we had no idea what a rat race was compared to what we have now. He laughed. Yeah, a rat in a maze is always looking for the cheese. We're in a maze now, and don't know where the exit is. I hooked a fish and reeled it in, a small brim. And we're looking for cheese, fish, or whatever we can find. Thad laughed again. Never heard of fish rats. He then rolled his eyes upward with a big smile on his face. Uh-oh, look out. I followed his eyes to see Sarge stomping his way toward us. Morg! I waved at him. Over here. He shook his head. No shit, Sherlock, you're in the wide ass open. He dropped onto the kayak beside me that I'd turned over to use as a bench. You know where Wildcat Lake is? Yeah, I know where it's at. Why? He unfolded a map and spread it out on the ground in front of us. Point it out. I jabbed my finger in the dirt, about 2 inches to the left of the map's outer edge. It's over there. Well, shit, he replied.
You got the adjoining map?
He shook his head.
Can't find it.
Do you think you could direct us there?
Oh, yeah. I can get there on the trails. I used to hunt in a swamp near it.
You know anything about an antenna near there?
Yeah, it's on the southeast side.
Can you get to it? In the dark?
I looked at him.
You mean, like, me take you there?
He nodded.
You know Mel's gonna be pissed.
He nodded again.
And you're gonna be the one to tell her.
This time, he shook his head no.
We need to leave about 4 a.m.
He stood up.
There shouldn't be any shooting, just a meeting.
Tell her that.
I'm gonna tell her you said so.
Whatever it takes. See you in the morning.
Oh, you in trouble now, Thad said, and slapped his knee.
What are you laughing at?
I'm gonna throw your name in there too.
The smile on Thad's face melted.
Why you gotta drag me into this?
Grinning, I said, not so funny now, is it?
He smiled.
You want me to come?
Hell yeah, if you want to.
In that case, I don't want to.
I shook my head.
You're an ass, I said with a smile.
A biggin, he said as I walked off.
Mel was at the picnic tables, watering the seedlings she and Bobby had planted, when I strolled up, giving her a kiss in the cheek.
How's the dirt?
She dipped her solo cup into a bucket of water. Hope it starts to grow something.
It will.
I hesitated. So, hey, I have to go out with the old man and the 3 musky queers in the morning. To my surprise, her reply was a simple, okay. I expected more, and was prepared for the sharp tongue I figured was coming. When it didn't, I wasn't sure how to react.
I'm just taking them up to Wildcat Lake. They're meeting someone. He said there shouldn't be any trouble.
I didn't want to say, any shooting. She dunked the cup again.
It's all right.
You know how I feel, and I know you're going to do what you want.
It's not like that. But he's helping us, and if he needs my help, I gotta return the favor, you know?
You don't need to convince me. Whatever. The sound of an approaching vehicle interrupted us. Sarge's buggy rounded the corner with Mike at the wheel, the smoker in tow. I slapped Danny on the back as he was getting out.
Hey, man, you got it!
Danny looked back at Mike as he unhitched it.
Yeah, we got it, he said abruptly, then walked off.
Hey, Mike, what's up with him?
He's upset, man. His place was pretty trashed.
No shit, what happened?
There were some kids fishing in his pond in his backyard. They told us that the DHS goon squad comes through every day, probably checking to see if we're there. From the looks of things, they're pretty pissed, and did a number on his place.
I shook my head.
Man, Bobby is going to be pretty upset.
If she takes it half as hard as he did, I can only imagine.
Did you see my place?
No, we didn't want to take any more chances than we had to. Sorry, man.
No, that's cool. I wouldn't want you guys to get hurt looking at my place.
Jeff walked up with Thad.
Looks like you boys have a very devout fan club, he said.
Sounds like it.
I'm surprised they haven't burned the whole neighborhood to the ground yet.
I walked back to the cabin to tell Mel the news.
Mel was still at the table, arranging her trays of planted seeds. I told her about Danny's house and suggested that our place was probably in the same condition. She shrugged.
Guess it's a good thing we aren't there, then.
Yeah.
Hey, are you all right?
She sat down at the table.
I don't know. I'm just kind of over it.
What do you mean, over it?
I was a little worried.
When we were at home, this all wasn't so bad. I mean, it was bad, but being in our home with power and running water made it bearable.
She looked around the small cluster of cabins.
Being stuck out here is really starting to weigh on me.
I reached out and took her hands in mine.
I know. Believe me, I know. We may not have the house, but we've got each other still, and that's all that matters. And this isn't going to last forever. It can't.
How can you be sure?
How long will it take? 5 years? 10?
Might as well be forever.
I don't want to waste my life out here in the boonies.
I smiled and kind of laughed at the statement.
You got something else to do?
An appointment I didn't see in the calendar?
You know what I mean. Besides, we've got other problems.
What?
Food. The stored food is almost completely gone. All the canned stuff is gone, except for one canned ham. We have rice, beans, and grits, and some freeze-dried and dehydrated veggies and stuff. That's about it. Oh, and sugar and salt. We have lots of that.
Really? All the canned stuff? Even the butter and cheese?
We have some of that, but who's going to make a meal of buttered cheese?
Grinning, I patted my stomach. Well, if we had bread.
Don't get me started. I've been craving a sandwich for days now. I dreamed about pastrami and Swiss on rye last night. Waving my hands and shaking my head, I shouted, "Stop it! Stop it! Stop it! Don't even talk about it! We're going to have to do something. There's so many people here and our supplies weren't designed for it. It's about to get desperate around here. There's plenty out here. You just have to know where to find it." She stood. "I'm going to go see Bobby." I walked around the table and hugged her. "It'll be all right. Don't worry." Our conversation weighed on me as I walked down to the river. Thad and Jeff were down there as well. "Either of you know anything about stuff we can eat out here?"
"If we were farther south, I could help you out. But up here, not so much," Jeff said.
"I know some, but I'm no expert," Thad said.
"We're all going to have to become experts, and quick. Our food stocks are pretty much sapped. We've got to start foraging." Jeff looked out at the river.
"This is probably as good a place as any. Better than back in your neighborhood, at least.
I'll help. You just show me what to get, and I'll do it."
"Me too," Thad added.
"There's a lot in the river and along it. We're going to need to get some canoes if we can. The kayaks are great, but it'll be easier to harvest and transport stuff in canoes."
"I hate canoes," Thad said. I smiled.
"Ah, are you like Mel?
She can turn a canoe over, looking at it."
A smile spread across his face. "Big men and canoes don't go together too well. We can get them from the park upriver. There were a bunch of them in the same place where we got the picnic tables. We can take the boat out tomorrow after I come back from helping out Sarge," I said. Jeff nodded. He dug his hand into the mud and pulled out a large mussel. Holding it up, he asked, "Can we eat these?"
"In theory, yes. But in practice, I don't know. I've heard of people getting sick. Back home there was this little Italian place I'd go to. They had the best mussels. I'm gonna see if I can come up with some. I'll give them a shot and see."
"You better only try one,"